Hey, everybody, this is Smartless. It's a podcast with Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and myself, Sean Hayes. And we, how the show works is there's a person that comes, like a guest that comes on. Well, one of us acts as the host.
Slow down, man. I just feel like you got a lot of extra energy today, and you're all over the map.
Let me just finish then.
Okay.
So there's somebody comes, one of us acts as like the host and brings on somebody that the other two don't know about, like something like that.
Yeah, that's great.
And so then, it's a surprise.
Just say that, man.
All right, or just listen to another episode. I don't really care.
Smart.
Hey, do you guys, I'm doing my own laundry more often, and a lot of times I'll forget, like, it's in there, and Scott will be like, can you get the laundry? And I'll forget that it's in the dryer, so I have to fluff it up for, like, 20 minutes, like a half hour, so it's not so wrinkly. But then I forget to get it again, so then I have to, the next day, do it again. Do you guys do that?
You're becoming a fluffer is what you're saying.
Like, I think that's the headline right there. We got it. Yeah. It's better than leaving your wash in the washer because then it smells like
mold
mildew.
And shit.
Yeah, and then you got to rewash it. And that's a smell, by the way. Yeah. Hang on. This is perfect for you, Will, you dirty hockey-playing Canadian. There's a smell to hockey gear that is like clothes left in a washing machine that for some reason you guys get used to. How do you get used to that smell?
I had to come in the side door with my hockey bag, and it had to go straight down to the basement to the boiler room where the heater was, because it couldn't be, my mom's like, it can't be in a room with anything else other than the fucking heating
equipment.
Yeah,
but it doesn't bother you, though. It doesn't bother hockey players, that smell.
It.
How do you get used to that?
Because it's a sense memory. It reminds you of the rink.
Ugh, you're rotten.
It reminds you of the rink.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, but it reminds me of camaraderie. It reminds me of being part of a team, being some part of something where I'm not just thinking about myself.
It smells like ass, okay?
Well, let me also just say this. I love listening to you two guys who don't do laundry on the reg discussing how quaint
it is. And
you're
out there just pinning stuff up on the line, right?
Fucking give me a break.
That's fair. Did I mention the magic people?
Yeah, you got a team of them.
All right.
So let's get on with the show. We've probably got an impatient guest waiting.
So this girl that we have on today is extraordinary. She kind of came on the scene like a thunderbolt. And she's the first Asian American who won a Golden Globe Award for Best Actress. One of the funniest people out there today. A brilliant,
we'll see.
Brilliant actor.
Yeah, we're going to see.
It's Awkwafina, everybody.
Oh, Awkwafina.
Awkwafina.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
What's up?
Hi.
Well, listen, Awkwafina, I wanted to have you on not only because I'm such a huge, huge, huge fan, but you're one of those people
Are we, Will.
We all are. But you know the premise of the show that each one of us, each episode acts as the host and we bring on a surprise guest. So I wanted you on, but we just all happen to be fans. But and you came on to the scene in such a huge way. I mean, your voice, your comedy, your attitude, all the stuff that you do, it's so fresh and nobody's really kind of, it's just a breath of fresh air on the comedy scene. And I'm like one of the many who are like, who is this girl? And where does she come from? She's brilliant. But because from where I sit, it all happened overnight, but we all know it took 12 years to become an overnight success. But is that how it feels for you? Or were you like, Jesus God, it's about time?
that's exactly how it feels. It felt like it happened overnight. And I think with that came a lot of other things, it's not lit, you know what I mean? It's not like, I think there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of self-doubt, imposter, there's so much.
Yeah, because you're kind of you're a quintessential example of a YouTube star.
Yeah.
Who got her fame and notice from YouTube and then transferred over to this massive Hollywood brilliant actor.
Is that true? So that was your first sort of foray, was through self-generated stuff that you did?
Yeah. I put out a video called My Vag when I was back in 2011.
And it was an answer to my dick, right?
My dick. Mickey Avalon's my dick.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
Can you give dum-dums like me a little refresher on...
What YouTube is?
there's that. Is that two words or is it one word?
Oh, jeez. That was so sweet. Hang on, Jason, the light's on your phone. You keep switching the light on your phone. He's so old.
So,
first of all, tell me about my vag, and then also, what is a vag? Is that a car?
What is a vag?
Yeah. Is it a pet, or is it? How do you spell it?
It's VAG.
Uh huh. So that's an acronym for.
I guess it's a nickname.
No, I know what a vag is. Was it a song? Was it a?
It was a song. I started out as a rapper, so. I did that one and I got fired from my job because
no way.
She had asked like what I did on my birthday and I told her I made a music video. And at that point she thought I was like this very meek assistant, which I was.
What kind of job assistant for what?
It was for a
seminary,
a book.
It was a book club?
Like a publisher. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In New York?
In New York.
And she fired you.
Not a progressive publisher, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, they don't exist anymore. So, like, who cares? But I was also like a shitty assistant, you know? But I think it was the name of what it was called. And she was like, be careful what you put on the internet.
Uh huh.
You're like, no worries. I'm just putting out a video called My Vag.
Yeah, it's like, I'll be fine. With visuals, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever want to go back to being an assistant and just nail it?
Yes and no. I still don't have closure from being part of my job. I'm for real.
No, but you're a very successful rapper. Like, you sell albums and your YouTube rapping videos, like, millions of people watch. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah,
damn it, I feel old. Again, sorry, the YouTube, is it a TV?
The YouTube, it's kind of like a TV, within a computer. And
I got to get up on the rap.
Yeah, man.
Damn it.
You got to download it.
You went from Nora Lum, mm-hmm. which is your name, to Awkwafina.
Yes.
And I know you're sick of talking about it. Where did the name come from? Blah, blah, blah. And you hate people comparing it to bottled water because that's a dumb joke. So
yeah.
we'll do that one later.
He's working on it right now.
Why have we designated me for that? I didn't even think
all the
about
dumb
that
stuff.
Old man. Again, you guys are so old. I'm way too young and hip. So Nora from Queens.
Mm-hmm.
Is the name of the show you're on.
Grew up in Queens?
Grew up in Queens, yeah.
For reals. Okay, so grew up in Queens.
Born in Stony Brook, actually.
Born in Stony Brook, okay.
Hey, now, Canada. Try not to bond. Don't bond with her over Stony Brook, okay?
Yeah. Hey, chill. I lived in New York for over 20 years, so I'm all right.
Angel.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So did you go to Performing Arts High School in New York?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
I thought I heard that. I thought I heard that rumor.
Oh, cool. Then.
And how was that experience?
It was good. I mean, I wasn't a good student. I think... I played the trumpet, you know, and I think I just didn't have the moxie for the trumpet, you know, like I was, you know, I just.
Was that the track that you were on? Was it a music?
The trumpet track. Yeah. I don't even know what that track looks like. I don't know why. I don't know what I was thinking.
A lot of world beaters come out of that program.
I think when you take the trumpet, I think that first year you just learn, and then second year they teach you how to be a junkie, don't they? Isn't that part of it?
Really?
Like Chet Baker, you just have to become a junkie.
For sure.
And it's tough.
Because I think that's, you know, it's hard to imagine where one goes with that, but... That's what I loved.
How did that? Were you working at the publishing house during that, or doing any other rapping yet?
At that time, like in high school, or
that was in high school.
Well, you know, I started working at 10.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Yeah, so I started working.
Let me tell you something. Jason was supporting a family of 8 by the time he was 6. Okay, so he's not a good. They were like, Jason, go and act up on set so they have to go into overtime, okay?
Yeah, you've seen Oliver Twist, yeah. Wait, so Awkwafina and Nora Lum, which is, you know, it's fascinating that you created the name Awkwafina. For people who don't know, just explain where the name comes from.
I've always been kind of very awkward, so it's kind of a play on that. But there really, you know, there's no story. I just thought it was...
Awkwafina.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And then
what's finer than being awkward?
Right. There you go.
And yeah. What determines how you'll introduce yourself between Nora and Awkwafina? Like, and when you're 95, will the nursing home call you Awkwafina?
I'm going to make them all call me Awkwafina. be like one of those situations. I don't know. I think, they're both obviously like a part of me. It's a difficult situation. I think I'm not really at the point in my career where I can suddenly go by another name and right. people will kind of put that together.
Right.
What does your best friend call you?
I make them call me Awkwafina. They call me Nora.
They do?
Everyone calls me Nora, yeah.
Oh, really? No one ever, they ever go Awkwa for short?
Yeah.
Or Q?
Some people just, throw their own, not Q, but they'll throw their own pizzazz in there.
Right.
it's good.
When you were growing up, you had a restaurant, your dad or your mom, or your dad's Chinese, your mom's Korean,
mm-hmm, yeah.
right? And who was it that owned the restaurant, Lum's?
My great-grandpa.
Oh, your great-grandpa.
Yeah.
And how cool was that? Like, there was a Lum's in my hometown. I can't imagine that was the same one.
Where?
Glen Ellyn, Illinois.
Yeah, no.
Chicago.
Yeah.
No? Okay, so we can cut that part out.
Did you enjoy
it? No, we'll keep it in.
Yeah, good question. Did you enjoy it, Sean?
We never had the money to go. It was like a fancy restaurant.
Well, here we go again. Right, buckle up, everybody.
get the violin. You play horn, I'll play violin. Awkwafina, sweet Nora.
It's my daughter's middle name. I do love that name.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, not a lot of Noras.
Mm-hmm. I have a deeper question. Uh-oh, here we go. they're already snoring. My dad left when I was about 5, and your mom left in a different way. She passed away when mm-hmm. you were 4.
Yeah.
So a question I get a lot, which I like, is how has that informed you or your relationships or your work? Do you think that's informed you or affected you in what way?
There's a softball.
Yeah. We're going to start an easy today.
Probably a short answer to this. Nice, Sean. And a great transition too, Sean.
Yeah, I'll give you guys a Cliff Notes version.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Because it affected me.
No, I mean, it's a legit question. I think it's taught me things like humility, embarrassment, the feeling of being embarrassed for like adults, which is like a kind of a weird feeling to feel as a kid. Almost protecting adults for their own sorrow. So like learning that, but then I think that it teaches you something about just kind of like cruel realism about life. This kind of like the cruelty of and objectiveness of life. It's not, it just teaches you those lessons really young. And I think as a result, you can say that some develop humor out of it.
Yeah.
But for me, I think it's the ability to in those times see humor also, because I mean, how bad worse could it get?
Right. And strength too, probably, right? A thicker skin. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Did it give you that sort of that ability of like, fuck it. I mean, I've already been through so much. I can handle anything.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it makes you tough. But then I think for others, I think that there could be kind of not really good coping mechanisms. We kind of swallow it down. So it comes up later in life,
Right.
But I think kids are a lot better at dealing with trauma than adults. I think they have a easier way of just shutting it off. But, I do believe that the best comedians do go through some kind of, through something,
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think it shaped you, Sean?
Almost exactly the same way. It made me, my dad, left when I was about 5, and my mom raised all of us, but she was never around, so it forced us to parent ourselves.
Mm-hmm. How many siblings did you have?
5. I have 3 older brothers and an older sister. And it made me, it's fight or flight kind of feeling, and if when you choose to fight, it's sometimes your best quality and sometimes your worst quality.
Yeah.
And and so both come out even to this day, Jason can attest to that.
About the coming out?
No, about the... Because
that's what it sounded like you were saying.
Okay, sure.
I'm not ready to make an announcement on the podcast.
No, sure.
It's not his place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. One time when I was a kid...
Oh, boy.
And I haven't shared this.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
A little bit of a music change. Get the audience ready to laugh.
Yep.
One time we were supposed to go to St. Bart's for spring break.
And there was no more room in first class. You guys had to fly in business.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. Yeah, that sucks.
It's tough.
How did that affect you?
And I've always been able to look back on that and reach for that.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Every time
that's so beautiful.
Every time I'm booking a flight. No, no, not my career. I'm just saying every time I book a flight, I always think about that. Book an extra seat. So in case. What did you think I was? This is insane.
Sorry. No, I'm with you now.
But I will say, so Awkwafina, I don't know about your experience, but Sean, you do talk a lot about your family and your origin and all of that and your upbringing. It is such a huge part of, obviously, of who you've become. And all of us do. Jason, you talk about it too. We laugh about you being a child. And we all do have our own experiences. And you're younger than we are. Can you feel it like you're in it right now? And can you feel yourself drawing on those experiences as it's happening? Because I feel like I reflect now more, I guess because I'm getting older.
Well, you also got those two boys, three boys. Four.
Four total,
Four boys running away.
Three boys and a stepson. Yeah, I know.
So that's a mirror in front of you all the time. And Sean and Awkwafina, do you guys, having sort of a challenging upbringing or an atypical upbringing, does it make you more or less want to be a parent?
Mm. I was going to ask the same thing. Does, especially with the loss of your mom at such a young age, does it make you want to be a mom?
I mean, it gives me more trepidations about what that experience might be like, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. I think the funny thing about success and like doing what you're able to do, like that seems like a gift, because like what we do is, we're so lucky to be able to do what we do that I think when you enter that, you forget a lot about your childhood and the things that you grew up kind of missing or being resentful over. And then I think, you know, you convince yourself it's all good. You know, it's I'm successful. This is great. But then it will come back. Yeah. And it'll be, for me, it's like now at a point where it's, I don't want it to be crippling. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like things come back for sure.
Yeah. This is going to sound like a crazy question, but because I don't want to have kids, and from the answer you just gave, it kind of sounds like you're more leaning towards that. So then are you an animal person? Like, do you dogs, cats, and all that, or no?
Yeah, I have a cat in that house, yeah.
Okay, take care.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like cats? Why?
No, I'm kidding. It's just like, no, I like cats. I'm a huge, huge, huge dog guy. Yeah. But I like cats.
Do you get to travel with them?
No, they don't want to come with me.
Yeah.
But you'll travel with your cat, I'm hearing. Yeah.
Once, yeah, and we had given him like cat Xanax, but he's like 35 pounds. So,
do you have any left over?
Oh my God. No, it's long gone.
Okay,
you've got a mountain lion at 35 pounds.
He's a big boy. He's very, very large, and so he gave him the cat Xanax, and on the flight, his eyes were like wide open. And then, I was just like, "Oh, is he sleeping now?" Wide open. And then he had shat, and it was miserable. It was a miserable flight.
Wait. He shat in his cage.
He had shat in his carrier because we didn't give him food, so the Xanax would hit harder. But then we gave the Xanax to him in a treat. And when we did, all of his treats came out. So he basically ate all of his treats and then pooped on the plane.
Oh. And when they come out, they're not treats. I will say that.
Just
they're not treats
at that point. Yeah, it's just normal feces.
I had an ex-girlfriend once. We traveled with the cat. Same thing happened. And I just swapped seats with somebody else.
Yeah.
You're like, you just give up at some point. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Thank you to Organic Valley for supporting the show. I'm just finishing up a little cottage cheese here. See, the thing is, I'm always on the hunt to find the best dairy products. But so many options out there. Which one do you choose? With Organic Valley, you can feel good choosing their dairy products. Their products are ethically sourced from small family farms where cows spend lots of time grazing outside on organic pasture. Organic Valley dairy doesn't come from those big factory farms. Their farmer families are real people who care about people, animals, and nature. It just tastes better. You can taste the organic. For me, look, I'm a coffee guy, okay? Guilty as charged. Every morning, I do the same thing, which is I come downstairs, I make my coffee, and the thing that this so important ingredient is my half and half. And I just happen to choose organic Valley half and half even before they started supporting the show. I mean, talk about a match made in dairy heaven. And I also happen to enjoy their eggs and their butter and their other products too. So I was going to say, so sue me, but so don't sue me. When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you enjoy a great tasting organic dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals they call it home. And do not ask me to convert that to hectares. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell ya, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye. Seps. All right, so then Awkwafina, between music and acting and comedy, stand-up and all this, so would you ideally like to continue sort of a blend of all those things, or would you like to transition to kind of have one dominate your career?
I never really had a plan. I mean, music is something that I do all the time. That's like what I like doing is making beats, making music and stuff. So that'll never leave. But I think I don't really know about the other stuff. You know, that's not.
I feel like you were about to say music's my passion, and you backed off it and said it's what I like to do. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true, because then I like heard myself then, and I like thought about the tattoo that I have.
Passion is a tough word coming out. Yeah.
Oh, believe me, I know that feeling. I'd say it all the time, because Jason always describes himself as an artist, and I'm always like, gross, dude. Gross.
Yeah, guys, I just like to tell stories, you know, just a storyteller.
He has a big comedy tragedy masks on his back tattooed.
He can't tell the difference between them, apparently.
I had a director tell me one time, and he'll probably listen to this and know it's him, but he's never hired me anyway, so what the hell do I care? And he said, you know, and I decided, somebody said to me, you're a storyteller. You need to be telling stories. And I'm like, excuse me, one second. I've got to barf everything I've ever eaten in my life.
There's always a friend that tells you that when they've given up on advice to give you. And that's how they'll end it.
Right.
It's like, you're a storyteller. You just tell stories. Okay, I got to get this story.
But it's fair to say that music is, you are passionate about your music. That's okay.
I am, because I had to really learn music and spend a lot of hours getting better at it. And I guess it should be the same for acting, but it, you know, that it just, with comedy stuff, it's like, I didn't have to, you know, study that.
Right.
It just kind of is what it is.
And so acting is obviously what I'm getting is you kind of just fell into acting. You didn't really pursue it, kind of pursued you. I mean, is that?
I mean, it was a mutual, I think, you know.
But I mean, did you actively wake up ambitiously pursuing an acting career?
No, not at all. I think I woke up ambitiously pursuing anything that would like pay rent, you know?
Where are you finding most of your opportunities now? Is it acting or is it music?
I mean, I haven't made music in a minute. I think I'm still kind of, I have to find out like who I am now as an artist. I think that's been put on hold. Because I've been doing a lot. A lot of it is in movies and stuff right now.
Yeah.
And are you happy with that? Is that where you want to keep it pointed? You said that you didn't really have a plan. Do you have a plan now, or do you kind of like not having a plan and things seem to be working out great not having a plan or being overly strategic or anything like that? There's something to be said for that.
For sure. I think it's you know, it's a little bit of both. I really enjoy that. I enjoy making movies. It's what I love doing. And it's cool because it affords me time to like do music and to, you know, have that also. So. Yeah.
And so do you feel like, being what, you know, politicians like to call a minority and a woman and all of those things that you, do you feel like you have to approach everything like from a place of, you know, I'll show you or are you like, fuck it, and I'm just going to enjoy it and that fight doesn't run that deep for you? You know what I mean?
You know, there's not a lot of people like me that, you know, I grew up with that. And that's not even, you know, to say that to idolize or but literally to see like how what happened with them. Right. And I think in that way, whatever we're doing right now, you know, in the beginning, there was like you meet a person like me and you don't understand what kind of person that is, you know?
Right.
And I think...
or what to do with that person, what box or to put
what,
them
yeah,
in.
Yeah, what to do with that person. And as that person, if you don't have like a roadmap of what has happened with other people, you don't know.
Right.
You know, and so like in a lot of ways, a lot of the this generation of Asian American and other minorities that are coming out right now, they're pioneering something.
Right.
And they're going to get all of that to make it easier for the next generations.
And so do you feel like you have to be self-generating then? You have to create your own projects because
always.
They're not coming to you or?
Well, I think that's always, every person should have a self-generating aspect to their work. You know,
sure,
you don't want to be the person that's like sitting around waiting for a call. You know, you want to be able to do that and you don't want to lose that. But yeah, I think as a minority, you just don't know what box you would fit into either.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So then would tell us about your, to the extent you're comfortable or interested, about your experience being a minority in a place like New York City. Did you feel fortunate that you were in a city that is as much of a melting pot as New York is? I mean, I'd imagine you didn't have anything to compare it to, but I would imagine it would be easier there than some other sort of, less progressive place in the United States. Yeah.
The thing about New York City is you don't feel like the minority there because like I had trouble grasping xenophobia and certain kinds of things like that when I was a kid, because how is that possible when the world looks like the way that it does? And I also think that there is something about New York that forces you to grow up a little quicker, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you then feel that you were exposed to sort of that prejudice and that racism there? That did you feel that xenophobia was present there or not present? Was that what you were saying?
Xenophobia was definitely present through my childhood in terms of like, I mean, I think there's this Asian American writer that said Asian Americans are kind of united by the discrimination that they went through growing up. Like a lot of Asian Americans are the ching chong and like the eyes things. And I grew up with that, but I also know that I would also like prove people wrong in a sense that I am not going to be the Asian girl that you think I am when I open my mouth, when I start talking. And so like, you know, when I have road rage, for instance, and they think they just, you know, roll down my window and like start screaming and they're it's like a look of horror. And I think in that moment, they're changed.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You know, so
yeah, I love that.
It's just always,
And do you feel pressure from the Asian American community then to be like a spokesperson for them? And, you know, is that something you embraced, or do you feel more like that it's an obligation, or none of those things?
I think when artists first start out, they want to be themselves. You know, they want to be the artist, the storyteller, right. You know,
right.
You owe something to your community regardless, because yeah. you are representing them. Like I've said this, I will be on my deathbed and my dying breath will be, I didn't want to represent Asians, and I would still be representing them in that moment, you know?
Right.
So it's like, right. it's a responsibility that I take seriously.
And they're like, what's that, Nora? And you're like, call me Aquafina.
Or like, it's Aquafina, bitch.
Uh-huh. By the way, going back to the rap thing, because I think people who don't know you from that but know you from your movies, and by the way, I think I've seen every movie you've ever been in.
Oh.
I just think you're, and The Farewell, you were just, no wonder you won that Golden Globe. That was unbelievable, incredible performance. Yeah, just
Thank
amazing.
You.
But going back to the rapping thing, because a lot of people who see, you know, you from movies, like, wait, she was a rapper? Like, and... what were your influences? What made you want to get into rap? Like, what was the person or the situation or the thing that you were like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm really drawn to that.
I mean, I grew up in Queens listening to that. And, you know, I had a love affair with it when I was growing up. I worshipped DJ Herc, Kool Herc, you know, DJ Rashad. I loved producers, J Dilla. I was really into, like, the old MPCs, the Akais, into that. And when I was in high school, and I think, you know, I was mentally depressed, hip hop was a music that I loved and that spoke to me. I listened to, like, People Under the Stairs, Tribe Called Quest. And it was a genre that I loved. And I think in terms of when it became like my vag and stuff, I
she said with a straight face.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was making beats and you know, I wanted to do a response to my dick. I mean, I've, you know,
right.
to this day, I still make beats. It's what I love.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
What a sentence.
Yeah.
when it's read back in court, it's going to be incredible.
I know. Jeez.
What did she say?
The stenographer is like, my yeah. badge, my dick.
Yeah.
So the fact that you are an Asian American, raised by your grandmother, who you've called your best friend, mm-hmm. which I love because I loved my grandmother so much, and taking the journey from America to China. And then you get a script handed to you about that exact same thing
mm-hmm.
called The Farewell. And you were amazing. Do you ever feel like, oh shit, like, well, that relationship between a girl and a grandmother is just a slice of who I am. But I wonder if Hollywood is like done with me now because that's the thing they see as my life offering. You know, do you feel like you now have to create your own things going forward?
Mm.
And not just that, but when you read that, were you prepped? Did you know that what you were getting into, or did you read it and go, were you like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, as you went?
Yeah. I mean, Sean, you just brought up a really interesting point. I never thought of it like that. For me, it felt like really auspicious that I couldn't believe that this even exists,
right.
You know, and I definitely felt unprepared for it. Like I knew that, like, this, I've never done this before. I just started acting.
Right.
But I felt a connection to it. And like this kind of preconceived notion that I could do this, even though I
right.
don't think I have the skills right now, I could, because I feel it.
Right.
You know, and it was one of those really rare things that's like, you know, the two connections, it's like,
right, because the thing that Hollywood loves to do is the second they find, especially if you're a minority, gay, Asian, Latin, African-American, whatever it is, and you find that thing, they go, oh, they did that, great. Let's find somebody else now. Because
mm-hmm.
they check that box for life for them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who do their, like, you know, their film of their life story, okay, well, you can't top that. So then,
yikes, yeah.
And then the artist is left going like, oh, well, how do I figure this out again in Hollywood? Like, how do I figure out my new place now to move forward with other
right.
roles? Because a lot of those people will just see me as that one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you like that part about acting, the whole sort of concept of pretending to be different people? Is that what excites you about acting, about kind of morphing into different kinds of characters?
Yeah. I like that about it. All of it. And I think, for the stuff that the farewell, the kind of the heavier stuff, it really is a I'm going to sound like one of those assholes, but it is a transformative experience. Like, it's like deeply emotional. It does have to do with like your past. A lot of those things are present in something that normally, what I was doing was just, you know, straight comedy. Yeah. So there's an aspect of fun, but there's not kind of like that, you know, your insides are involved in it. And so that was an interesting thing. And there is something that's like, holy shit, is this really bad? Like, is this horrible? You know, and all of those doubts and those fears, which I think, you need, you know,
right. Yeah, like, for sure.
It helps it. Yeah.
And you know, you just have accomplished so much so fast. It seems like you're just a massively successful, talented actor, rapper, writer, producer. What do you want to do? What's left that you're like, I still haven't conquered blank?
Yeah, where would you love to be in 5 years if you could if you could write it out?
I think photography. You know,
really?
No, I have no idea.
We were ready.
Oh, you guys are so dumb. I did not, for the record, I did not say, really.
My eyebrows got
really
high. Well,
why did you say really? That's so horrible.
But I will say this. So, like, you, and Sean's right. I mean, you have done, it's incredible. It almost kind of makes your head spin how much you've done in such a short amount of time in so many different areas of the arts. Nora from Queens, you made that a couple years ago?
5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Is when we... First, yeah.
When you first did it, and are you, so is that over now? Are you continuing?
We're going into season 2. Yeah,
you are. You're going to make more.
Yep, we're going to make more.
Yeah, and do you like that experience making that show?
I do. It's interesting. It's my life, and you know, it was my one of my first executive producer jobs. So there's a lot involved with that, obviously. But yeah, it's my own, so it feels different.
So you're going into season 2, and it's your own, and it feels very personal and. Is that something you would want to keep making it? Do you see that 5 years that you're doing season 5 of Nora from Queens?
I'm not counting that out. I think it everything has a natural course. You know, I'm not going to force people to watch something that no one wants to watch if that's the case. But
I will. I will. I'll totally do that.
It's so great. You're so great.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker... lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplish something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcast.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
So, Awkwafina, what are you? Are you an introvert like me where you've got your PJs on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Or what'd you do today? Do you go out a lot or do you stay in and do a bunch of writing and a bunch of thinking and reading? And what type of person are you? You in or out?
I mean, well, today I actually went to the Grove and I hit Venice Beach, went to a buffet.
Come on. So, no, none of those things were allowed.
I'm an extrovert and introvert. I felt I definitely went crazy a little bit in this thing. I realized I probably am not the person that I'd want to be quarantined with, you know?
You don't like being inside all the time. You like to get out and socialize.
Because that's what essentially it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to stay at home and, you know, smoke pot and watch movies and stuff.
Oh, I like that.
I actually just saw one. You remember Love Stinks, Jason?
Oh, God, what are you doing?
What is that?
We need things to cut out. This is good. Keep going.
This part can go.
Oh, man. We're going to keep it. This is good.
I know a lot of weird facts about that movie because I owned it growing up and I had the director's cut. So I actually literally listened to Bridget Wilson and the director do the director's cut talking about all the little gaffes. Like there was like this bottle of liquor that was always there. I know weird things about that movie. I've seen that movie thousands of times.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. French Stewart, man, Christmas. I love that movie.
Come on.
It doesn't age well, for sure.
And I had this big, stupid, long sheep herder hair.
Dude, it was lit. You were awesome.
And with a Hawaiian shirt or something. Guys, it's a real treat to take a look at.
It's really.
I'll check that out.
Jason shines.
It should be known that I have, Jason knows this, I have a pristine copy of Teen Wolf 2 on DVD at my house. And for some reason, I've showed you a picture. And for
I was, yeah.
Teen Wolf 2.
Whoa.
But it's Teen Wolf T-O-O. It's Teen Wolf also.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
It's not a sequel, goddammit.
No.
Wow.
He's a Teen Wolf too. And so I have this copy it's on my dresser and for some reason it's on my dresser. So I look at it every day.
Why?
I see this.
Why don't you change your dresser? Move stuff around for Christ's sake.
Awkwafina, you've not seen Teen Wolf 2?
She's not aware. You've seen Teen Wolf 1? She's very young.
Yeah. She's
Awkwafina, we used to play in a card game and Sean used to play in it too. the three of us used to, this is, we're going back a while now, at least 15 years. Mm-hmm. We used to play Tuesday nights at this guy, Kyle Gass's house. And
oh, she know, well, you know Tenacious, too.
Yeah. Tenacious.
Oh, you know, yeah. So you know Kyle.
It's Kyle Gass and Jack Black's group. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sean, if you remember, Sean came in the first night and did really well, like won, like just like, I'm in. He just kept going,
dumb luck.
And he won. And then he never won again.
Yeah. Like the worst thing you could do. Or no, he didn't really come back that often, did he? After that,
no,
he just took his
once
winnings.
Once he started losing, he was like, I'm just
what's
losing.
What's the
like,
game?
Texas Hold'em is poker. Oh. Yeah. And so this is like 15 years ago. So then, but Kyle gave Jason the name of T-Dub, as in T-Dub. He would just go. And every time the bet was to Jason or anything, Kyle, and they knew each other, Kyle would go, T-Dub, you in?
I miss playing cards so much. I know,
that was, God,
how
damn
much
fun it. I know, that was fun.
Wasn't that fun?
Let's talk about the weed.
Uh-huh.
So you like to smoke joints, smoke bongs, chew on gummies, or a little combination of each?
Sorry, 1 second. Before you answer that, Aquafina, just know, Jason, nobody's smoking bongs anymore. This isn't a 1979. It's not Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
You guys aren't ripping bongs? You guys aren't.
Wait a second. Now, in my youth, there was a real ceremony. Buying a new bong about every 3 weeks. Me and the fellas, we'd go.
Every 3 weeks?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was so fun. Those big, huge, like, $100 bongs with five chambers and chop up some ice and oh.
Yeah.
So,
are you ripping bongs, Aquafina? No.
You have a bong in that house right now. I guarantee you do.
There's a bong in the house, yeah.
See? Will.
There's a bong in the house.
Stupid right. Will. Now, are you using that bong?
I've been using a Volcano.
See, that's a whole new level.
What is that?
Go ahead.
It's made by this like German brand, and it's called Storz & Bickel, this brand. And it's in a Volcano, and then you take this, basically a plastic bag, and it vaporizes all of the things. And then
you put the plastic bag over your head.
Like, Yeah, think about your life a little bit. Exactly, cry. And
put
yeah,
the
and then
bag
you just,
over your head.
Yeah.
So wait. So the bag expands with smoke.
Yeah.
And then you throw your face inside the bag, or do you make a little hole?
There's like an actual like a little. It looks like the top of a water bottle.
Sure.
And it's what they call it is it's weed on tap. So
sure.
You should just keep. Yeah.
So when the Volcano's not available, your next best stop is, you like to roll your own joints. You consider yourself a good joint roller?
Tinctures, usually.
Tinctures? Oh.
Like a droplet.
That's like an oil, guys.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, what is a tincture?
It's like just like a little droplet of.
It's like an oil. It's like, like a little dropper.
It's
and
like
you
a little,
put it under your tongue.
It didn't rhyme
right?
with sphincter.
It's a terrible name.
Jason is fascinated with how people consume their weed, and he always asks, first of all, bongs, and secondly, he wants to know if people are
rolling. Does he open with the bong?
Well, yeah,
he
want to know.
He always has the bong, and then he wants to know who's rolling their own joints.
Mm. Well, that's something I used to love. I used to love to roll. I consider myself a very good joint roller.
Oh.
And I do enjoy a bong. I think the bongs are pretty amazing. Now, they will get kicked over by the guy who smoked a little too much.
Right,
so you got to put it up on the table, okay? Don't put it on the floor.
You're a great parent, by the way. You're a great parent.
Is that what you wanted? Put that on the table now.
Exactly.
Wait, but the benefit of a bong, because I think I did one once a long time ago, is you just need one hit and that's you're good. You're good to go for a long time, right?
Well, the water cools the smoke,
right? So it's smoother.
I think you can inhale.
Hang
a
on,
lot.
What's that, doctor? How does it? Excuse us, everybody. Shh, quiet in the back. Look at the scientist is here. Hey, Aquafina, what I need you to do, I think what needs to happen is you need to go and smoke weed with Sean. You need to teach Sean because Sean is like a one-hit wonder.
What does that mean?
He takes half a hit of weed and he is...
Calls his mom immediately.
Oh, yeah, that's all right.
Who's she's been dead for years.
Oh.
Great. Dead mom jokes, Will. That's awesome. Did you listen to the beginning of the podcast?
I stole his joke. I stole his joke
Read
from him.
Read the room, yeah.
That's all right, John's
listen,
joke.
Aquafina, there's never been a better topic to end on than weed.
Yes, for sure.
So, but listen.
Let's do it. I'm down. Let's do it, Sean.
I you don't have to ask me twice.
Let's do it.
I'm so down for that. And by the way, perfect way to kill quarantine time. But I'm so happy, and we are so happy to finally meet you. I've been a fan for so long.
Thanks. Same, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you for, and you know what? Thank you for representing an underserved and overlooked minority in this country.
Yes,
and doing it in such a beautiful, thoughtful, funny, talented way. So you're just brilliant.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
Really nice to meet you guys.
I want to get a little too high and watch Love Stinks with you and get paranoid and insecure. Yeah.
We can rip a bong.
Oh, look at that. That's nice. I love watching young people be nice to a boomer.
It's great. It's really fun.
It's great to meet you, Awkwafina, and thank you for saying yes to sitting and talking with
us. Nice to meet you guys. Big fan.
Bye, honey.
Bye. Right. See you later.
Bye, guys.
You guys embarrassed me.
You guys embarrassed me. What a nice, charming.
And funny, quick.
Funny and she's kind.
So yeah, no, she's great. I mean, and by the way,
she's good.
Unless I got it wrong, we'll fact check it. But I think to be the first Asian American lead actress to ever win a Golden Globe, ever?
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
It's pretty rad.
And to have, like, so quickly have her star rise and to watch it. I feel like I'm watching it myself.
She's got this big show. She's got all this stuff going on. And yep.
And I follow her on Instagram, and she's constantly working.
And you'd think watching a film like Love Stinks would have torpedoed any sort of creative instinct she had going forward. But she's so strong, she can watch stuff like that and a performance by me like that and still carry on and deliver Golden Globe quality work, you know?
What year was Love Stinks?
I don't remember. I poured cement over the whole thing. No. It was, I think it was maybe early 90s. I got to check. Anyway, it was fun. It's fun to look at, you know, like any old pictures, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I say pictures, I don't mean films. I mean like photos.
Oh. Do you refer to film? You will not refer to films as pictures?
If you ever hear me say I did a wonderful picture with
it punched me
in the face.
We were working on a picture, and I'm going a ways back now.
What about like when you say, we did a wonderful, wrote a wonderful piece, or we performed it in a great space?
Or the other way, sometimes when you hear, there are certain affected American actors who go, and of course, the cinema is, you lived in Paris for 18 months?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah. Hey, what kind of science classes did you guys take in high school? Did anybody take, like, chemistry or?
Boy, hang on a second. I got to put my neck in traction from the.
Biology.
Smart.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.